Welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast from ExchangeWire, bringing you the latest news and views from the world of ad tech, media, and marketing.
Hello and welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast. I'm Amy, editor at ExchangeWire, and today I'm here with John Still, our head of content. Hello, John. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, caffeinated, ready for a good discussion.
Good, good, ready. And today we're also here with Charlotte Stavrou, founder and CEO of 7/6 Agency.
Hi.
How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. Yeah, it's good to have you here. We're looking forward to the discussion. So we're going to be looking predominantly at social media today, focusing on some figures of the global ad market, and then two stories looking at Meta and what's been going on with them lately. So kicking off today's stories, let's look at some figures from Walk. 90% of ad dollars entering the global ad market are going to online only channels. And social media is the largest single advertising medium, being responsible for 41% of ad market growth this year. Meta is expected to account for over 60% of all social media spend worldwide by the end of the year, although its share of the social market is expected to dip slightly over the next couple of years due to TikTok's continued growth. Meta, Alphabet, and Amazon now attract almost 56% of total advertising spend outside of China. Charlotte, I'll come to you first. What do you make of the figures from Walk?
Two things. I think it's not surprising. I think we can all kind of know who's in control and who's getting the most money. But I think it's also, on the flip side of that, quite scary that there's so much control in one place. It's like the monopoly, which feels kind of dangerous in a sense. Well, there's two sides to it. I can speak on a creator perspective because obviously I own a talent management agency, but on the creator side, we are under the thumb of the algorithm. So if one of the apps choose to change their algorithm, in a blink of an eye, we could all lose our income. But it's also exciting because they're the apps that we're all using. So yeah, it's like a two-sided coin.
Yeah, everything's in their hands.
Yeah. I feel like there's room for a new app, which would be exciting, but I don't know how that would even work with that monopoly. How are you going to compete against such big people?
What kind of app do you think there would be space for?
So I think about this all the time, and I think I really like Pinterest. I'm a big fan of Pinterest and YouTube. I feel like they're just such friendly places, depending on what side of the internet you're on. But they feel really friendly, and they feel really, you can really discover things in a very different way. It's very much based on your wants and needs, which I think TikTok can be like that as well. Whereas Meta is definitely what's pushed at you. So I think whatever the app would be something that would be just a bit more positive, a bit more like based on what your desires are, not on what one video you watch and then, goes on whatever the algorithm wants you to be looking after that.
Yeah, definitely space for something less toxic.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
Didn't want to say it.
John, what do you make of the figures?
Yeah, it's as Charlotte said, no surprise that this is where ad spend's going. Like, there is, like, it's concerning for the open web in general, because, the rest of the web is competing for a budget that amounts to what is spent on Meta in 1 month. It's like, it is all going to those platforms. I think 55.8% is going between Amazon Meta and Google, which is cutting off a lot of spend to a lot of really good publishers and platforms. And it's, as you said, Charlotte, like, you can put all that spend in and then the algorithm can change overnight and your audience falls out. And it's tricky. It's like, again, no surprise at all that money is going to Meta and going to the social platforms, because it's like unparalleled reach across vast swathes of the globe. It offers an awful lot. But there's also kind of the black box question about who you're really reaching, what the algorithm is offering you. And sometimes I think it is because it's the easy option and it offers the kind of the cheap metrics, it offers the high kind of high performance offering to brands and to marketers. But yeah, it is concerning that that's an upward trend as well. There's more players are coming into it. TikTok's going to take a chunk next year as well. I think spend's going to rise there quite significantly. And then that brings in the retail media side of things as well. But it's not a surprising statistic, but one that still like people should be taking stock of, I think, in terms of where they are putting their ad spend.
Yeah. And Charlotte, what do you think the biggest negatives are for advertisers when it comes to kind of how it's all concentrated with the dominance of such few social platforms?
I think it's what you touched on, John, in the sense that you are kind of pushing out the smaller publishers. And then with that comes like a real lack of diversity and like the conversations that you're having, because the algorithms on these platforms are pushing certain narratives. And it just means that, you know, we're all going to be fed very similar content, just in a specific way for our kind of persona. But there are so many publishers that are, you know, incredible, independent, and we could be putting money towards them and be getting a bit more of a diversification of the content that we need as consumers. On the spin to that, there is a positive in the sense that if you know how to play the game right, you can, like, as a spender, you can do it well. So on one side, it's like, okay, let's put money behind it. And you can get great results. But I think the problem is, especially for smaller brands and smaller businesses, a lot of businesses will put money into one of these publishers and then just go wild with it without really knowing how to work it properly. And then it's just kind of lost spend. So yeah, there's a bit of an issue there. But I think my biggest issue is around the diversification of content, because I just feel like everyone's being fed the same thing and it's getting a bit, it's quite jarring.
Yeah, absolutely. John, do you have anything to add there?
I think that, yeah, it's interesting with the kind of, with the new agentic side of things and what Meta and what these platforms are publishing they can do for advertising. I think they said basically, give us your target audience and we'll do the rest. That includes creative. That's kind of, it takes a lot of the autonomy away from brands and it's being posited as a good thing, which is, it, like, to your point again, Charlotte, it's a complete lack of personality in advertising. Yeah. We could end up with an AI spitting out exactly the same advert for any company selling running shoes, any small company selling, you know, I don't know why I've got athletics in my head, but protein bars, just something like they are, you know, it's just pushing out the same crap because ease, reach, and the promise of these huge metrics when outcomes are what need to be focused on. And there's a whole web out there that's focused on, there's niche publishers, there are legacy publishers who have amazing audiences that they need and have needed for a long time to know how to harness. And instead they're being eaten alive by platforms that can offer cheap scale reach. Social is incredibly important. Social media has a link to an audience. You know, it can be creative. It builds community, but it's not being used for that. It's been used to push out cheap AI slop advertising. So I'd just like to see some more consideration in the whole thing and to look at those wider audiences and to look at the open web where there's a lot, you know, there's great publishers out there that you could be advertising next to. So yeah, more consideration for me.
Definitely, yeah. And Charlotte, do you think, just on a more positive note there, do you think there's any things that are kind of opportunities that are sort of only available on social media that you can't really get, like for advertisers?
Yeah, I think social media, I've spent my entire career working in social media. I obviously love it. And I think it's such a great vehicle when used properly to target incredibly niche audiences and, you know, different types of people. I wrote a post about this recently about, it's more of a negative, but how we're seeing a push on paid spend on the creator side of just big faces, big personalities, not necessarily focusing on like community or like real interaction. People are just slapping a face onto a piece of content, pushing as much paid spend behind it. And then we're seeing those vanity metrics. And I think a positive spin to that would be if someone could not do that and start working on content that's like really community driven. And community, when I say that, sometimes people are like, oh, you know, like small local communities. That's one form of community, but community, I mean, in terms of audience. So every brand, every creator, every online personality will have their community. Some would call it a fan, some would call it an audience, like some would call it people that follow them or followers, subscribers, but I would refer to it as a community because they're there for a reason. And if you can hone in onto these specific publication, specific platforms, different people, people's communities, you could, and put the right amount of money into it, you can do some real good there. And I would love to see, and in that post I did on my Substack recently, I've mentioned that I'm hoping that it's, you know, my forecast for 2026 would be that's what we're going to see off the back of people seeing the lack of ROI on the current kind of strategy with paid spend. I'm hoping that we'll see that, and just people just twisting how they use social media back to how we used to use it, which was to just find our people. So yeah, let's see. I'm really hoping that that's a prediction that comes true, but I think we're really going to, at the end of the year, when people look at their budgets and look at how much they've spent this year and what they want to spend for next year, they're going to think, wow, we spent a lot of money. Well, where did that money go? There's a lot of pieces of content that we pushed out. What did that actually achieve? Who did that target? What did my brand get from that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's so much advertisers can gain from kind of tapping into that community, that audience, for sure. So now moving on to our second story, looking at Meta's attempts to increase safety for children. So Meta's introducing new safeguarding features to allow parents to block their children's interactions with Meta's AI character chatbots available on Facebook, Meta, Facebook, Instagram, and the Meta AI app, as it addresses concerns over inappropriate conversations. So the safeguards will be added to teen accounts, the default setting for users under the age of 18, and parents will have the option to block specific AI characters if they don't want to stop all of the interactions with chatbots for their children, and they'll also be able to access insights into the topics their child is chatting about with the AI characters. So how effective are these safeguards likely to be, Charlotte? What do you think?
I have a bit of a mixed view on this. I think it's obviously great that this is happening. I wonder why it's a reactive approach. Like, why wasn't this embedded in from the beginning? Like, I'm confused as to why these safety features weren't thought about from the start, which worries me, because it shows that people are creating really, really exciting tech, AI, software opportunities that can change our lives, but they're not thinking about safeguarding anyone. And children are so important in terms of the safeguarding, because the internet is such a, it can be such a horrible place. So yeah, that's my biggest kind of reaction there. It's like, why is that a reactive kind of thing that sounds really exciting, but why didn't they do it from the beginning? I think it's great, and we'll see how it goes, because kids use tech way more than us. And as you know, as time goes on, they know how to. My 13-year-old niece has only had a phone for a year, and she can use her iPhone in ways that I've never used my phone. And I've had a phone, you know, for the last however many, like 20 years, whatever. But I feel like they'll just get around it. There's only so much you can do. Parents can put these controls in place, but you know, a 13-year-old can take these controls off easily. So I don't know. Yeah. In principle, it's a great idea, but I feel like it's kind of too little too late.
Yeah, kids know how to work around these things, don't they? Yeah. And like you said, it's horrible to see. It's always kind of an afterthought. It's always when they get in trouble doing something, then they move to correct it instead of actually implementing something from the start. Yeah.
Which kind of makes you feel a bit like, I don't really want to say it, but are they profiting off of this mistake? Mm-hmm. Because there's probably a lot of money that they'll make from whatever's going on the internet that needs to be safeguarded.
They don't give a toss until they're told they have to, and they do the bare minimum to put a standard in. They do not give a toss about people, well-being, safety. It's like, it's that always that line from Jurassic Park, which is they were so preoccupied to think about whether they could that they forgot whether they should. And it's like, who on earth needs a horny chatbot, man? And why are kids being given access to it? It's ridiculous. This story makes me deeply sad from top to bottom. It's nice that they are putting standards and safeguards in retroactively when there should have been them to start with. But the fact that these things exist is saddening. I mean, that's me probably from a Luddite perspective because I would not dream of wanting to talk to an AI chatbot as a friend. And it's sad that kids might. But the fact that they introduced these things without thinking about the repercussions and had to be told them before doing anything is alarming and shocking. And we're seeing it across the board. Like OpenAI announced that they were now introducing explicit adult content into their systems, and it's highly monetizable for them.
Yeah.
And this is the only thought. And I know it's business and I know it's profit, but my God, it's, to your point, Charlotte, sad that it's a reactive move rather than a proactive, thoughtful initial step. And yeah, no one needs a horny chatbot.
No. Yeah, no, it's interesting to see where it's all going. I guess it would have gone that direction because I guess there's a lot of money like for them to make with these things, but
the AI and chatbots are developing at quite the pace, and I'm sure there's a lot of utility for them. We're seeing the new agentic standards that were announced last week, the attempts to kind of see the protocols talking to each other and how agentic are going to be brought into buying and ad buying, which is super interesting, and you know, very much the future of ad buying. But it's this stuff, it's sort of the like every day, who really needs this stuff, and where's it going to go? And I fear that regulation, the horse has already bolted, and we will be working reactively again, and then yeah, it'll be too late.
Yeah, I think it's already too late.
Yeah,
I think also thinking about children throughout time, you know, they will always access the things that they shouldn't access, you know. And when we were younger, it would be like bringing a porn magazine into school because everything was in print, or watching those shows like Eurotrash and Sextera and those shows that we had on TV in the UK, which shouldn't have been allowed. But since thinking about the things that, kids do. But AI and the internet make things so much easier. Parents don't know what kids are doing on their laptops. Kids are using laptops for school. Really young kids. I was actually quite surprised because I don't have, you know, I'm pregnant now, but I don't have kids. So when I was seeing my nieces taking their laptops to school at the ages of 10 and 13, I was like, oh, I didn't realize that was a thing. Because I didn't get a laptop till I was in university. But they are so smart. A lot of them, I don't want to generalize, but generally kids are smart. They know how to use technology. They can get around whatever kind of systems we've put to block things very easily. I've seen it happen. And I talk to a lot of my friends who are teachers, and the issues that they're having to go through at school as young as year 7 because of the internet, because of AI, because of apps like Snapchat, even Meta, it's really worrying. And having these things happen just makes you think we're screwed. Because they have even more access now to things that are so dangerous, especially for their development. And there's such an epidemic, especially for young boys, around hyper-sexualization of young girls, around porn, around even how they feel about themselves and what, you know, masculinity looks like. And this is just going to add to that. And I just feel so worried. And especially now thinking about bringing a child into this world, I feel so worried of what my child will consume in the future, because we had access to things that now feel so, PG in comparison. So yeah, I really, really worry about this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that it's that difference, and you know, the parallels stand up in terms of, like, kids will always find they'll always find the whatever the illicit material is. Like, the difference for me is now the platforms are pushing it to them,
rather than
not like an illicit sort of, you know, a clipping from a porn mag, or it's not like a late night, you know, putting on Eurotrash or whatever it was at the time. It's same parallels, but the platforms are actively pushing it towards it,
which feels like it's not the same parallels because it's normalized it.
Yeah,
because what kids were doing in the past was they were going to seek it, and it was like something that was naughty, and you know, oh, I'm going to get this and I'll bring it into school or whatever, I'll show my friend. But now they're just given it. It's like, oh, you can just have access to this, it's yours, and there's no kind of game to it. It's just part of their everyday existence, which I think is really, really damaging.
Completely agreed. Yeah. Now let's move on to our last story, looking at some more Meta news. So the social media giant confirmed that Instagram is testing skippable ads within Reels, which allow users the option to skip and move past an ad when scrolling. So the test aims to assess whether the format helps users discover businesses. A Meta spokesperson did confirm that the company doesn't plan to share ad revenue with creators. Do you think users will receive this ad format well, Shana? What do you think?
I think I always have two sides to this, in the sense that on the creator side, it's really depressing. Like, why are you not sharing that revenue? Creators, if we think about the amount of money being pushed into social media, creator marketing is a really big part of that. And not just, like, we're seeing a trend of performance marketing and paid social and different teams using creators, but creator content. So it's not necessarily like influencer marketing, it's using those people to, you know, post on their own channels, on the brand's channels. So you're using creators more and more. You're not going to pay them this additional income. That is, for me, a really big strike. But on the other side, I think it's a really interesting model, in the sense that they have to fight a little bit harder to capture attention. Because if you've got good content that doesn't feel like an ad, then you're not going to be skipped. So it just means that there might be a slight difference in, like, there'll be a bit more innovation, I hope, in the kind of content. And I think that we'll have to see a push against the AI content, because it will all be the same. And people will be like, oh, that's an ad. So you'll be able to see what's performing and what's not based on the type of content that you have. So I think there's a positive here, in the sense that content should get better, because you have to make something that's not skippable. But on the other side, creator marketing is currently going through a lot. And I feel like the creators have been used quite heavily over the last few years, and now we're kind of being pushed to the side. So yeah, I have two sides to that.
Yeah, hopefully we'll see, yes, like you said, kind of some good innovation, people yeah. are pushing to make more interesting content. Yeah, I guess it wouldn't be for like that ad format, but it's always funny, like when you see a video and then you don't actually realize that it's an ad, like yeah. until the end, you're like, wow, favorite. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a sign of a great ad.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's it. Yeah. John, what do you think?
It's just basically ripping off YouTube, isn't it? It's yeah. another Meta non-idea that they've taken from another platform that's having great success at the moment. I'm really high on Meta today, aren't I? This is one of my better days talking about that company. But no, it'll be interesting to see how it works. And I do like your positive point, Charlotte, that it could, you know, it encourages better creativity and more yeah. innovation in that space. But it's not new. It's just another platform's done it well. So Meta are introducing it. Nothing new there. Just another example of how Meta do business.
Mm-hmm. But YouTube do pay their creators.
Ah, even better.
Through ad spend. Yeah. So YouTube is really good for creators, because they get ad spend. I'm not on YouTube, so I don't know what it's called. But they get money from the ads. So that's why I'm quite alarmed at why Meta would not do that, because it's a good model.
That's like I mean, we've seen YouTube take over really in the last year. It's gone from being kind of something that publishers worried about, because it's where their content's going, to something that everyone is jumping into partnerships with. Yeah. People like Channel 4 are putting full episodes on. ITV yeah. have done a partnership. It's good for creators. There's that monetization angle. So no surprise that Meta want like a piece of that.
Yeah.
But it seems funny that they'd have taken away the tangible benefit of the monetization yeah. with it. It's baffling, that one. But no, it is testament to the strength of YouTube as a channel that
yeah.
that their formats are becoming so popularized and nicked.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So how extensive do you think the opportunities are for advertisers, John?
I'm not sure really. It opens up kind of, obviously, yeah, opens up that new creativity and a lot of testing and learning from it. But yeah, I'm not sure if there's much more to that in it really.
Yeah.
Yeah, same. I think I have been to a lot of events recently where people have been talking about the lack of creativity in the creative world right now. So I am really excited to see things moving towards having to fight for creativity again. But outside of that, I don't know if I have an opinion on it, because, yeah, as you said, it's a tried and tested method that will work. So let's just see it roll out.
Yep. Yeah, that's yeah. It. Hopefully, it brings some good things.
Yeah. Fingers crossed.
Please, we need it.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good note to finish on. So, Charlotte, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been great to have your insights. And thank you, John.
No worries. Thank you for giving me my soapbox to stand on and rant about Meta again.
And thanks for listening. Tune in next week.
You've been listening to the Mad Tech Podcast, brought to you by ExchangeWire.